Learning to ride a bike without training wheels is just like listening to the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. A Medicare podcast that almost never pops its peas. He's such a cheapskate, he narrates his own audiobooks. It's Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Well, hi there, ladies and gentlemen. This is your old pal, Doug Jones. As Drew McMillan just told you, I'm your Medicare expert for today and maybe for the rest of the week. This is the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast, coming to you several times a week to help you make the transition from Obamacare to Medicare. It should be a pleasant experience for most people. It should save you money, give you better coverage at a much more reasonable cost than you might have had up till now. And frankly, it might be kind of fun. That remains to be seen, but in any event, we are here to help you make that transition without trepidation, without angst, without fear. You heard the episode opening, the announcement was done by my Canadian nephew, Drew McMillan, big time Canadian entertainer. And he is always on call to come up with something pithy to say, not pissy, but pithy to say about this podcast, Medicare for the Lazy Men. I have written books. I've written one each year called Medicare for the Lazy Men, Simplest and Easiest Guide Ever. And those books are available at Amazon and Barnes and Noble. And they're light reading. They're reasonably priced. And more importantly, they're designed to help you understand Medicare and almost all of its ramifications and permutations in a very short period of time. So the content that we do, that we address on this podcast, is designed to support the information I have in the book, eliminate confusion, and hopefully elaborate on some of the things that might not be too detailed. So what do we have here? We have paperback book, we have an Audible book, and we have a Kindle version, all available for sale on Amazon at very reasonable prices. So having said all of that, I'd like to introduce Randy Carson, the engineer and spiritual guru for the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. Hello, Randy.
Doug, how is it out there in Illinois land today?
Well, as you've seen already, the internet can go away at a moment's notice, and that throws me into confusion. So yes. I would say that I'm a little trepidatious that we're going to have a solid signal for the rest of this podcast. You may remember the last episode was choppy and had to back up and start up a couple of times.
Yep. I'm hoping you're looking, 24x7, 4x4 now, but we'll see.
Okay. I don't even know what all that computer talk means, but it's that's impressive.
That's trucker speak for 4x4 means you're coming in real strong.
What is 5x5? Because that's what 24, I've always heard.
5x, it can be 8x8, it could be anything in terms of trucker speak. 5x5, 4x4,
I think 5x5 was what I always have heard historically. Is that military, maybe? You're coming in 5x5?
I'll have to look that up. But I do have, I'm glad you mentioned this, Doug, because, we have a section of the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast that we haven't done for a bit.
Uh-oh. This tells me that I have to clear the decks, get rid of all the scintillating content that I had prepared for today, and change to the other content that Randy always appreciates, and that would be the Medicare mailbag.
That's part of it, but I've got some Stump the Insurance Expert stuff,
too. Oh, no kidding. Well, I'm putting that away then. I'm putting away the MLM mailbag stuff, and I'm ready to be stumped. And it's a lot more fun than it sounds like it's going to be typically.
Well, yeah, this is going to be, this will bring a lot of memories back to old programmers such as myself. And I think ultimately people that aren't even in the tech business may know this woman. So ultimately, I'm going to ask a question of Doug as to how did the term, when computer software is not working appropriately, how did the term develop that it has a bug?
I believe that was discovered in one of those early ENIAC programs, machines. You may recall one of those early, or maybe there were IBM, some, you know, like a giant room full of an electronic marvel that was designed by a million people, has vacuum tubes, has its own cooling system because it generates so much heat. And I believe that one malfunctioned and people were disturbed at how difficult it was to identify the malfunction. And finally, somebody discovered a beetle walking around on a wire connection. And that's how the term bug was developed. Is that correct?
You're absolutely correct. It wasn't walking. It had been electrocuted, but it had welded itself to a particular switch circuit, which kind of stopped the computer from knowing what it should be doing. Because back in the day, as you know, all computer programs were actually hardwired boards.
I know, but I don't know how they worked. I mean, I know that everything is zero or one, and I don't know how a vacuum tube works to have that function operate. And I don't know how you'd make that function do math problems. You know, if everything's a zero and a one, it seems like it'd be pretty difficult to, well, of course, there's a language. There's a special language involved, right?
Yes, yes. Okay. Someday when you really want to go to sleep, I will tell you that whole story about how that works in terms of zeros and ones. But just suffice it to say, your initial question was how did vacuum tube do that? Yeah. They will let the vacuum tubes are designed in such a way, as are transistors, that they will either let current pass or they will not. So there's your zero or one. If it's not letting it pass, it's a zero. If it is letting the current pass, it's a one.
I'm hundreds of years old and I never knew that. I used to take my old time televisions. I mean, if the family got rid of a TV, I would take all the tubes out of it, go down to a local repair shop and test them all, because they'd have this big tube tester and that would tell me which tube was malfunctioning and everything. I never knew what they did. All I knew was that they had to function in order for me to be able to watch TV in my bedroom. And then, of course, the magnificent advance that transistors gave us, which was doing the same function in less space with less heat generated. And that gave us rock and roll music in our single earbud that, you know, I could listen to music out in the yard, which was fantastic. WOS or WCFL. My father listened to baseball games. Yeah, it was a primitive existence that we lived back in the 50s and 60s. So
I wanted to tell
you have more.
I did have another couple. I usually have three questions, and I'm going to stick to three. There was a woman that was very closely aligned with the early days of computing in terms of, you know, you need a whole room the size of a, you know, a basketball court to contain a computer. What was that woman's name?
I don't remember. I knew she existed. I don't remember.
Her name was Grace Hopper.
All right. Never would have gotten that.
She was a very, very interesting, special woman in that she was a member of the Navy. She joined the Navy way back when, and she's probably one of the oldest, or she actually stayed in the Navy from 1943 to 1986, and basically retired from the Navy at the rank of Rear Admiral.
Was she involved in cryptology, code breaking?
She was involved in all of that.
Okay, because that's what early computers were developed for during World War II.
Yep. And the thing that I was really, knowledgeable of her career and so forth is that she was so interested to educate people that when I was a member of a computer club at my university. And
okay, geekosity, here we come.
I know. It's terrible. But you would have thought that we were hoping to have a guest speaker at one of our sessions. And somehow or another, the club member that was responsible for lining up guest speakers thought somehow that she was going to get Grace Hopper to come speak with us. Okay.
And that plan didn't work, obviously.
Well, here's the reason I've always thought very highly of Admiral Hopper, is that our person put a call into her office in Washington or the Pentagon or wherever she was actually located. She had her right-hand person, whatever executive officer that, you know, took care of all of her minutia, actually called us back and said that Admiral Hopper was going to be at Offutt Air Force Base at such and such a time on such and such a day. And if we could arrange our class to be somewhere that she could speak with us, she would.
Oh, no kidding. I thought you were going to tell me that there was no chance that they were ever going to allow her to do that.
Nope. No, she said, I will gladly speak with you if we can make the arrangements.
Well, I hear a but coming. Did she actually show up?
We could never make the arrangements.
Ah, jeez. Okay. So you get me all excited. Grace Hopper is going to be in your classroom addressing your computer club, and she couldn't make it. Oh, boy.
And the last thing I would like to mention is that she was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom posthumously in 2016 by President Barack Obama.
What takes so long for these people to get their awards? Why do we have to let them croak and then think about it for a bunch of decades and then give them an award? Why not do it while they're still alive and kicking?
Yeah, why not give it to them while they can enjoy it?
Absolutely.
But, you know, me being a computer geek, I was always infatuated with her career.
Right, right. Well, you know, there are some other notable women that contributed mightily to the war effort and probably to military progress beyond that. One was, I believe, the cook, Julia Child. I think she and her husband were active in the OSS during World
yeah.
War II.
Yeah.
And then the other one that comes to mind is Maud. What's her name? Her real name was Frankel, but she changed her name for.
I know who. I know who you're. Purposes. Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
She was at the very least active uniform, active service in World War II. I don't know if she was involved in cryptology, but those people that broke the codes and allowed us to figure out what the Japanese and the Germans were planning to do saved tons and tons of lives. Plus, yes. They had to keep their exploits secret. They could not let anybody know that the codes had been broken. I mean, you know, like there's a whole video about the capture of an Enigma machine from a submarine. And the submarine was sinking, and they had to tow it back to the coast of, I think, Argentina during World War II, and, you know, before it sank, so they could get all the secret stuff out of it. And that submarine is now in the Museum of Science and Industry in Chicago.
Oh, my gosh.
Very, very popular diesel submarine display, a German submarine. And boy, those guys lived a hard life in a diesel submarine.
Yeah. I've never been inside of a sub, but I have been on the aircraft carrier that's permanently docked in San Diego. I forget the name of it.
Oh, yeah, I've been there a couple of times.
Midway.
Okay.
USS
All right,
Midway.
There you go. Yep, I've been there a couple of times. I've been on a couple of battleships, the New Jersey and the North Carolina. And the submarine in Chicago was outside. You would think a submarine would live under ocean water forever. But in reality, it started to rot. It was out and just, it was had an aisle from the building to the submarine and then another aisle back so people would go through the submarine and exit without bumping into those who were entering the submarine. And they noticed it was starting to rot away. So they built a whole wing onto the museum and trucked it around to the other side, and put it inside, and I guess made a whole nice display. But boy, that thing is... the one weird thing is you're in a piece of machinery. You're inside a piece of machinery, and it smells like oil and grease, and you bump your head on everything. And although the bunks where these guys slept and the tablecloths in the ward were all blue checked, like the wrapper on butternut bread, and it was just like a little touch of class in an otherwise kind of a hostile environment.
Yeah.
So
I got one more story to tell you about submarines, and then we better get to some Medicare.
Yeah, lay it on me.
I saw a YouTube video the other day where they wanted to impress upon people how submarines react when they're deep down. Like, nobody will tell you how far they can go. But anyway, this captain or one of the executive officers on a submarine tied a string from one side of the sub to the other in the engine room. And he made sure that string was taut. Uh-huh. And then as they went down, eventually the string got loose to the point where it would touch the floor because the water pressure was squeezing the hull so much that the string was no longer taut.
Oh, boy. Now, well, I had an interesting conversation at my recent class reunion, high school class reunion, had a 5 in the number of the celebrants, but I'm not going to tell you what the other number was. And I sat next to a husband of a classmate, and this guy says that he designed nuclear submarines. You know, he had a part in building nuclear submarines, not at Groton, Connecticut, but at Newport News, Virginia.
Oh, cool.
So I was picking his brain a little bit, and he was kind of a weird guy, but he basically said, I said, how much danger are we in from submarine technology by our enemies? And I said, specifically, the Russians and then the Chinese. And he said, the Russians have never successfully built a silent submarine. He said, we've got these listening stations all around the globe, and we know where every Russian submarine is because they're just noisy as all heck. They've never mastered silent running technology. So then I said, how about the Chinese? And he said, they're worse than the Russians. So that gives us a little breathing room. I feel a little safer at night when I know that our enemies are not exceeding our technology. Okay.
Well, that's good. That's good to know. We need to get onto some Medicare, but
You just started to say something and I interrupted you. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that's the whole reason we're here is Medicare. So we probably better give out some Medicare info. What do you think?
Got to do it. Yes, let's do that. And Randy always likes it when I address the items that have come into the mailbag. Our email address is dbj@mlmmailbag.com. And we love to get emails, but so many people use our questionnaires that are so easily found on the MedicareForTheLazyMan.com website that we don't get as many items in the email as we used to. But I will address a couple of them here. One is from a gentleman named Mike, who became a client of mine. And I believe his wife is also a client of mine. Anyway, Mike wrote and he said, I have, hopefully, an easy question. Once I sign up for a Part D drug plan, do I have a grace period if I decide I would rather use a different insurance company? I hope you find this informative and somewhat hilarious. I tried calling ClearSpring to sign up for Part D. Now, here's what happened. Let me back up. Mike is a client of mine, and there are a whole bunch of different insurance companies that sell Medicare Part D plans. I'm contracted with a few of them, but not all of them. So Mike gave me his prescriptions and the pharmacies that he wants to use to fill his prescriptions. I plugged that information into the Medicare.gov website, and it told me which plans were the most cost-effective for Mike, which ones would charge him the least in out-of-pocket costs, not just the monthly cost for the plan, but also co-pays for the drugs he takes, because they're all different, and it's really, really confusing. So I said, Mike, here is a list of 3 of the least expensive plans. I don't have a contract with the first 2, the cheapest one and the second cheapest one. So here are their telephone numbers. You can call up and enroll yourself. One of those, I've already mentioned the name, ClearSpring. That for him, because of the drugs he takes, the area he lives in, was the least expensive. So he says, I tried calling them to sign up for Part D. After a brief, difficult conversation with a foreign individual, I chose to sign up online. And then he says, Karen volunteered, I think that was his wife. Yes, his wife volunteered to assist him and told me I wanted the value plan. She confessed from reading your book that she had value plan ingrained in her brain. After double checking everything, I completed my enrollment by clicking on the confirm tab. I then went back and checked what I had done and discovered I signed up for the wrong plan. I had signed up for the value plan, but should have signed up for the premier plan as stated on your instructions, which Karen had possession of. I hate it when marital strife disrupts the Medicare enrollment process. At that point, I had no choice but to call ClearSpring. Again, a foreign person answered, and after I provided all that information, he had to escalate it to another foreign person whom I had to give all the information to again. He had to resubmit my application over the phone, and he had to read the entire application word by word so that I could verbally fill in all the blanks. This was a painful 45-minute process. I have to call them back next Wednesday and verify that they made the change from the value plan to the premier plan. This should be fun. And then he goes on to say, I take responsibility for the screw-up, in parentheses, I mean Karen does. But I really hope getting medications from them goes a lot more smoothly than the enrollment process did. The representatives were professional and courteous. I was a little leery about giving my bank account information and Medicare number over the phone, but I took the leap. And then he says, I do have a couple of questions. Can I purchase prescription drugs with or without a good RX card at a local pharmacy without using Part D? The answer to that is yes, you can. You can use either or. You can use your drug plan, or you can use your good RX or other discount card. You can't use both at the same time. It seems as though a couple of my prescriptions are actually cheaper at a pharmacy than they would be through the Part D plan. Well, you're still at a pharmacy if you take your card into the drugstore. His other question is, once I sign up for a Part D drug plan, do I have a grace period if I decide I would rather use a different insurance company? Elixir RX Plus would be my next choice. The premiums are only $1.50 more per month, but they may not be any better than ClearSpring. Just for consideration, you might entertain writing a new book, Part D for the Lazy Man. You may not need the money, but he thinks I make money from writing books. You may not need the money, but you could be the man that fixes the broken process in America. The process of pricing and purchasing prescription drugs in the U.S. is a nightmare. The price differences between one pharmacy and the next and from one insurance company to another are so far out of line, it should be a crime. This plus the crazy coverage gap and donut hole just makes my head spin. Have a great weekend. Well, I'm sorry his head spins, and it is a crazy system. And what I try to do for my clients is to take their information, run it through the government website, and hopefully just come back with the cheapest plan, the second cheapest, the third cheapest plan. Now, in Mike's case, he tried to enroll in the cheapest plan. It didn't work out. His next letter says, I have great news for all. No, this is me. I said, Mike, I have great news for all three of us. You can apply elsewhere as many times as you wish because we have not reached the requested effective date yet. Once you have a Part D plan covering you, the next opportunity you have to change would be during the AEP, the annual election period, from October 15th to December 7th. The last choice you make during that period will become effective the following January 1st, and you'll be stuck with it for the entire year. Be careful to note that the cheapest monthly premium is only part of the cost. There may also be cost sharing for some or all of the prescriptions. Also, yes, you can switch back and forth between good RX and your drug plan at will. Then I said, for Karen, your Medicare supplement plan is from United American, a company that strives to always have a live person answer the telephone and does not farm out any of their operations to India or the Philippines, as so many other insurance companies do. The downside is that you will almost never need to contact them for any customer service unless you move or want to change your premium payment method or something. And for me, here's a chance for me to keep checking Mike's drugs in order to find an acceptable plan that I can earn a commission on. Right now, of the three cheapest plans, the only one I'm contracted with is SilverScript, which is substantially more costly than the other two. Help me remember to do this again so we might see what has changed for 2022. And then I said, P.S., this will make very entertaining podcast content. Thanks for that. I hope it's entertaining. So then Mike writes back, just wanted to update you on my Part D progress or lack of it. First, let me say this debacle is on me. I'm just passing on information in case it may be useful for any of your clients. I signed up for the ClearSpring Value RX plan instead of the Premier. I know that ClearSpring was one of the companies you recommended because of the cost, and I would have picked the same one. When I first went to the Medicare website and loaded all my prescriptions in, I came up with the same information you did. Just to be clear, I don't fault you in any way. I have made my fourth phone call to ClearSpring today per their request last Friday to verify the change request, to verify that the change request went through for signing up for the Premier plan. Today, they said to call back in 2 more days because the change I requested on August 8th hasn't been processed yet. I have concluded that no Americans work for this company. I'm hopeful once the change goes through and once I begin to order my prescriptions, it will be a breeze, but I have my doubts. My choices are limited mainly because of the premiums. I understand that the premium isn't the only factor when figuring in the cost. Karen and I created an Excel spreadsheet to help factor in everything because of all the variables. I still think ClearSpring was the wise choice. However, if it doesn't work out, I'll try Elixir RX Plus next and then move on up the line until I find a company that works best. FYI, one of the things that makes this whole process a farce is the drug tiers and or formularies. For example, I didn't include Synthroid on my ClearSpring prescription drug list. When I added Synthroid, brand name, my yearly cost increased by $429. When I took out Synthroid and added the generic brand, my cost increased by $1,035. From my research, I found that I can purchase the generic at CVS and Walmart for $40 a year, and at Costco or Publix for $48 a year. That with no insurance or no good RX card. I also had one other prescription drug that would be $92 a year through ClearSpring, but is only $44 at a local pharmacy with no insurance. It's a shame U.S. citizens have to go through this crap. Those are not my words, ladies and gentlemen. I know all politicians are to blame, as well as Big Pharma and the insurance companies. What a mess. I'm sure Joe Biden and Nancy Pelosi have a plan to fix this. Don't forget Part D and prescription drugs for the lazy man. Best regards, Mike. So then I wrote, this is just a god-awful nightmare, and I wish I had an easy answer for you. You are right about the foreigners. All of these companies seem to have farmed out their customer service operations to the third world, and that completely sucks. If I could bring this to Joe and Nancy's attention, I'm sure they would be falling all over themselves to correct it. Right now, they are busy trying to wreck the country before the midterm election, so they won't take my calls. In the course of your search for an appropriate choice, you may decide to try plans from SilverScript, WellCare, or Humana. I can do the enrollment on any of those for you if you reach the limits of your patients. Thanks for adding to my trove of podcast content. And then finally, Mike writes back and he says, hi, Doug. ClearSpring called me today. I think it was from a request I made on August 8th after I had chosen the value plan instead of the premier plan. Even though I have talked to 2 other people since then and have reference numbers from each call, I think it just took that long for somebody to call back from my original request. Today, the Asian lady got my name, date of birth, and reference numbers, put me on hold to investigate my enrollment, and then I was mysteriously disconnected. The light bulb has come on, and I've decided this company ain't for me. What do I need to do to cancel my application with ClearSpring and sign up with Humana's Part D? I've given ClearSpring my bank routing and account numbers as well, and my Medicare number. I have little confidence that by calling ClearSpring, they will actually cancel my application, but if that's my only choice, I'll give it a try. Unless there's anything else you can suggest. And this is where I didn't have a stapler big enough to continue adding pages to that. But that poor guy is being tortured by the system that allows insurance companies to avoid a lot of human contact, at least by having English-speaking customer service people. They were not happy, but they were approaching it and with the idea of let's keep working on this until we succeed. And they actually had some, you know, good spirits about it. But it is a frustrating thing to deal with a huge company, get bounced around from one person to another, wind up speaking to people in foreign countries that are not primary English speakers. I wish I had an easier answer for this. The companies I deal with tend to be pretty easy, but that's because I do the paperwork, I do the enrollment for my clients that find those plans to be the most cost effective. So I'm sorry for Mike and Karen, but I think they're all set now. This was a couple of months ago, and I think everything is all set with them. So, Randy, you look like you're really sick of hearing about their travails and tribulations.
Well, I'm not. It just frustrates me to no end to hear other people traipsing through the, you know, the phone connections and the support people that don't know anything and repeating the same story time and time again. I go through these things in different ways, certainly not with Medicare, but with, I do, as you know, I do technology support. So I fight my way through the same types of things with technology companies, and it just rings true, and it just absolutely frustrates me that people have to go through that.
You must have cast iron intestines.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I told you that like the other day, I was, won't give you specifics, obviously, but I was trying to get a product installed on a computer that I purchased from a very large software company. And I was on the phone for 2.5 hours and I still couldn't get it done based on their instructions. So there you go.
as I told you when I first heard that story, I have an alternative source that may be more user-friendly for you if you ever need it.
You and I must talk.
All righty. Well, time to go, huh?
It is. We've actually burned our steam. The locomotive is rolling into the station as we speak. We need to thank everybody. But before we do, before we sign off, did we already talk about getting their books and their audio and all that stuff?
We can never talk too much about that. Some people remember.
Yeah, let's do that. Go to Amazon.com and buy your books. Buy several, hand them out for, you know, holiday gifts. They really fit well.
Stocking stuffers.
Or you can go, that's the black and white version on Amazon, or you can go to Barnes & Noble if you're interested in color. That's always available. And we have the audio book from Amazon, and we also have the Kindle version from Amazon. So there really is so many choices. I hope your head does not spin, but pick one of them because it's definitely going to be a good investment.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us today, ladies and gentlemen. We always appreciate it, and we'll be back soon.
Yes, we will. Episode. We have just spent about 32 and a half minutes with Doug Jones, the anti-insurance guy from Oklahoma, and the head pilot of the newly introduced MLM Air.
I think I've been demoted. I used to be the CEO.
Well, pilots are kind of their own thing. So you can be a CEO and a pilot.
All right, I'll take that. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.